Hey, it's Dan here. If you want to hear this episode of the Backchat podcast without ads and get extra content that no one else gets, head to backchatstudios.com.au where you can sign up as a patron and access all of our bloody good merch.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Backchat this week, powered by Paywise, of course, but we're joined by an absolute Western Australian sporting legend. I'm going to put him in that bracket. Mm. He may not himself. He just said, my story's boring. I said, I bet you it's not going to be.
No way.
Willie Pike joins us on the podcast. G'day, Willie. How are you, mate?
I'm going good, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Now, Willie, you may not know this, but you might. The first question we ask every guest on the podcast, right, and this is from our good friends at Tab Touch. Mm. Your greatest sporting achievement. Now, you might have gone to the racetrack here, some races you've won. Look, we know you're a good jockey, right? You've won, I think this is right, 3,222 races. Hey.
That's a lot.
That's pretty
that's
good.
That's decent.
Right? That's pretty good. It's about that many more than Dan and I have won.
Yeah.
But we want to know your greatest sporting achievement, not on the track, okay? So you need to get out of horse racing. Mm. Mine, footy yep. player, I'm a state hurdling champion, under nine state hurdling champion. Not very big. I was pretty quick over them. Dan?
That's right. You're just running. 5 for 16, bowling leg spinners, under 12s, grand final in cricket.
Now,
okay. Yeah,
Willie,
he loves it.
I know you're a cricket guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am, yes.
So is it going to be in the cricketing realm?
No, I was useless at just about everything. I think my greatest achievement outside of riding might be maybe running second in a swimming race at school carnival back in the day.
Yes.
I've got nothing.
No, that's good. What race? Freestyle backstroke?
No, breaststroke. I swim like a rock.
And you were second. You didn't win.
Run second, no, I didn't win. No.
Do you know who it was to?
They were going back a while. This is like primary school.
I swim like a rock.
Yeah, going way back. I was like, I've got nothing. Horses have just been my life. From the moment I left school. So,
yeah,
there's not a lot of room for sporting achievements there.
Well, breaststroke's impressive in itself. You know, everyone goes to freestyle, maybe backstroke. Breaststroke, you need the technique. And obviously, if you've got
a good enough technique to run second anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
That's very good. And another one we've been asking, thanks to Paywise powering the podcast this year, first car. Can you remember your first car?
Yes, I can.
What was it?
A little Toyota Corolla.
Color?
White, but it wasn't like a nice, it was like a bubble car, basically.
It wasn't a nice one.
It was the funny show. It was a cool car. I loved it. It did handbrakes everywhere.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a good looking one. I was a little disappointed because it was more like a bubble. It had the bubble back on it as a hatch. But at the same time, it went everywhere. It was good fun car.
Good thing about those older cars with the handbrakes, like nowadays it's like, zzz, like it automatically does it with a button. Back in those days, rip it up, do some little tails. Oh, yeah, great.
You don't get that in the Tesla, Dan.
You don't get that in the Tesla. All the front wheel drive cars, isn't it?
So, Willie, we know what a great career you've had so far, and we're looking forward to seeing more of that, especially with the Quokka coming up this weekend. This will go out the week of the Quokka. But I want to take you back to the start, mate. You're a Coolgardy boy. What's life like growing up for you, mate? And then how do you get into horse racing?
Yeah, so Coolgardy's a little town outside of Kalgoorlie. I look back on my childhood and I loved it. I loved every bit of it. We used to go outside, out our back gate and it was just open. And so we had motorbikes. We had obviously I had my ponies as well. Did a little bit of everything. We were always like always up to no good, but never causing trouble.
Fun on the line.
Yeah, exactly. But like favorite part, I suppose. If I wasn't at a friend's house, they were at our house. They were only ever a couple of blocks away. It just wasn't like when you think about now how I've got my own kids and
yeah.
I used to just walk out and go to my friend's house and as long as I was home by 5, that was all that was needed. Whereas now I don't know if I'd let them out of my sight.
Yeah.
But overall, honestly, I had a fantastic upbringing. Classical sort of family, I suppose.
Siblings?
Dad was a minor and 2-1 most times, and Mum did her best to hold the fort down at home. I have three older brothers, so there's 4 kids all together, and so I'm the youngest of the 4. And none of them are into horses. All various. They've all gone. Everyone's just about gone their own way. And
yeah,
yeah.
Did you used to ride the ponies like to the neighbour? They're that far away. Like you just jump on.
No. Unfortunately, we have to stable them out of town. There are a couple of kilometres out of town, but quite often we'd ride them into town and leave them in the backyard overnight and then ride them back the next day or something like that. It was the options were limitless. You could go for a walk a couple of kilometres out the back door and you're checking out old mine shafts, jump on a motorbike and just ride. It was just that was the culture. It was, I suppose now you'd be in trouble for causing noise or ruckus, but that was just what everyone did.
I knew you had siblings, but I didn't realise you were the youngest. Do you look back at your upbringing and being around those guys and think maybe that's helped your competitive spirit, the not liking losing, the did you have to grow up a bit quicker having older, you know, siblings to chase after?
The sore loser part definitely come on later on. But no, I think being the youngest, I got used to being beat. So I enjoyed if ever I'd run second last. So it was better than last. That was how I was as a kid. But I think the best thing about being the youngest of the 4 of us, I got to watch what everyone else did wrong and not copy that. I used to watch my brothers and I'd kind of, in a funny way, they'd get in trouble and then I'd go, oh, don't get caught doing that
don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, you know, parents were a lot stricter back then, I think. And yeah, you learn when not, where you watch your brother toe the line and you go, oh, he's stepping over the line there. And sure enough, whack. Yeah. All right, that's the line right there. Don't cross that. And that was kind of, I think, the advantage I had being the youngest, other than always getting the worst jobs.
Yeah.
You know, taking the trash out or something. I just got to watch the mistakes all my brothers made and there was plenty, between us all, there was plenty of mistakes made and plenty of backhanders dished out.
Yeah. Oh, it's just interesting because, you know, it sounds like you learned how to learn, right? You learn how to watch things and go, oh, okay, this is how we do that. And, like, we can all look back at our own, like, how we were brought up and whether it be in sport or life or whatever it is. And, like, quite often the lessons you learn back then is, like, how you've got to where you've got. So I just looking at, you know, you and not knowing enough about you, but, like, it certainly seems like something you picked up back in Coolgardie.
Yeah, I suppose at the time going through it you don't know it, but I suppose sitting here talking and actually thinking about it, that's probably the mindset that I developed, yep.
You leave school when you're year 9?
Yeah, I just finished year 9, scraped through.
So ticked it off.
Yeah, we got there. It was a challenge.
Yeah.
Just got through year 9 and then started an apprenticeship. My Uncle Arthur, who I used to go and he used to help me out a lot with my ponies, he lived in Perth on school holidays now and then. I'd float my horse to Perth and stay at his place for 2 weeks and he'd help me out with my ponies or I'd help him with whatever project he had going. And he put me in touch with a man called Jack Cockle.
Yeah.
And so on one of these visits to his house on a school holidays, he took me to introduce him to Jack. And Jack kind of sized me up like a horse, I suppose. He looked at me because obviously I was ringing wet at about, I don't know, I don't ever remember being heavier than 30 kilos, honestly. And he just sized me up and he goes, oh, you're little enough. And then he goes, oh, but you got good shoulders on you. And then he kind of pointed out a few things. And then, I don't know, after the conversation was done, he said, oh, well, as soon as you finish your school, come back. And so I couldn't finish school quick enough.
So you wrapped it up quick. I mean, that's an early start in racing. So
yeah,
that's your first job.
Yep, that's right. First job, first... It come with a lot of things, but to me, it didn't. it didn't really faze me. Like, I left home straight away. I think I hadn't quite turned 15. Signed up apprenticeship. There was a little bit involved at the time. You had to get letters and things from different places to allow it all to happen.
Yeah.
A couple of meetings with sort of Rao at the time. Yeah, it was a little bit teased, but the whole time I never was fazed. I was like, yep. And then left out. I never once was homesick. Always had a job to do, and I always had my mind focused on where I was wanting to get to.
What was the apprenticeship in?
So apprentice jockey.
Yep.
So for those that don't know, that's like any apprenticeship out there, you got to do, I think, a minimum of 4 years. And it's, of course, like all apprenticeships, you start at the bottom. So the worst jobs being picking up the poo, doing all the jobs that no one really wants to do, but they need to be done. And I suppose they're the least rewarded and the least thanked, but you work your way up to the point where you're riding horses and someone else is picking up the poo. So that's the goal anyway.
Just about getting out of the poo, really.
Until you upset the boss, and then you're back to picking up the yards again.
So can you race as an apprentice?
Yes, that's right. So I know now a lot of the rules and things have changed, but when I did the apprenticeship, there was a set amount of trials that you had to do. I think it was 20 at the time. And they had to be done satisfactory. So if you did 20 satisfactory trials, you could go straight to the races. So some of the guys that I went through, we did an apprenticeship school, actually, sorry, going back a step. So we did a 10-week course at Mushay. And so if you survived that, because it covered everything from the basics right through to just touching on racing. It was a fantastic time, actually. It was one of the best times of my pre-apprenticeship, I guess. And Laurie Millington and a few others were out there, and they took us through our paces. And if you survived that, then you went on to a boss. I was lucky, I already had someone pre-arranged in Jack Cockle. If not, they found you a boss, and that's your apprenticeship started there. And so some were lucky enough, they got their 20 trials out of the way and were riding real quick. I was asked to wait 6 months before I started doing trials because I was quite small. And then the boss, Jack Cockle, he held me back a little bit more. Because he said, "Oh, I want to wait for you and take you away to the country tracks so that you're not exposed on the grass just yet, because I don't think you're ready." And through it all, I was like, "Yep, no worries, that's all right, yes, boss." And so that was the beginning of the apprenticeship, and it started off on dirt tracks with no running rail, and but at the same time, they were the best times of everything of the whole riding career. Still, back then, is the most fun.
Can you speak about Jack, boss? As he just, yeah. Can you speak about how he's influenced your career? Because he's given you your start, but he's not someone that you've forgotten about. You've certainly had something to do with him right up until now, right?
Yeah, that's right. I still visit him now and then. He's in a home now, unfortunately, but he's basically a father figure to me in every way. He basically replaced my father. He didn't just teach me how to ride a horse. It was everything, all life lessons, money, or anything, any subject you touch on. He was definitely a character, and he had a fantastic way of teaching. Like, you were learning lessons and you didn't even know. Very, very rarely ever growled at you, but he got his point across. And just a great guy in general. As I said, he became a father to me, and I still visit him when I can. And right up till the point when he still had his trainer's license, I'd still go out there on Fridays and gallop his horses.
Yeah, I read that. There were stages where you pretty much only be riding Jack's horses, doing track work.
Yep, that's right. I had a Fridays used to be designated, set aside for his horses.
Yeah.
I'd go out and there'd be four or five, or sometimes, you know, maybe even eight or ten of them, which at the time was a little bit tricky, but I still wanted to keep the bond going, because at that time, I suppose, I'd moved on to city riding and he still had country horses. But I know he's just always wanted to be part of what he was doing, and he's always kept a real big interest in me too.
He said, to quote him, he said, "You're a better man than you are a jockey," which, given you're a great jockey, then, he's had a fair influence on your life, not just riding horses.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely, in every aspect, and I look up to him in every way, and still enjoy catching up with him when I can.
Footy players always get asked, what happened in your first game or how'd your debut go? And quite often it's, I had one touch or I sat on the bench for the first half. do you remember your very first race?
Yes, I do.
How'd you go?
There's a horse called Hitchhiker in Esperance.
Yes.
I sat three wide eyeball in the leaders and run last. And I come back into the room and I wasn't a very smart kid at picking things up, but the looks I got from the other jockeys, I knew I'd done something wrong.
Right.
And I was that simple as far as a racing brain goes. I had no idea that allowing your horse to sit three wide eyeballing the other runners was like the biggest, one of the biggest no-nos that you can do out on a racetrack. It ruins your chances. It ruins everyone else's chances. And I just didn't know that. I had no idea. And I picked it up pretty quick not to do that again.
didn't Jack, because you rode a lot of his, didn't he tell you not to take his horses to the front ever again? And he said, no horse will he ever ride of mine won from the front.
So pretty much exclusive. He always made me sit horses. I don't know if that was his style or whether he thought that would suit me, but nearly exclusively the whole time I rode for him, I did lead on a few, but I got in a lot of trouble when I did. But he's always just made me sit them and come from behind and learn to save them for that last run.
Does he still give you feedback now?
Like absolutely. Yeah. He's still probably my biggest critic or supporter as well, all in one. He'll let me know if I've messed one up but also he's pretty good. I think he's gotten a bit nostalgic in his old age. Now he tells me that sometimes I do a good job.
So those early days of racing, you're in the country more and then you make a graduation to sort of city rides. Is that a big step up in what you're doing, or is it just a bit of an evolution of what it's like to be a jockey, just getting better and better?
I suppose it's a little bit both. Like, it was a little bit of evolution for me, but at the same time some very steep learning lessons in there. Mm. It becomes almost like a hobby and then gets real serious overnight. So like you're in the country, there's a lot less pressure. When you mess up, there's not as many eyes on you or things like that. But that's not to take away from the country racing, but when you come to town, there's cameras on every angle. There's a lot more pressure. There's a lot more people needing you to do a good job because even the trainers are under pressure by this stage.
Yes.
Whereas the country racing almost feels like that's what a lot of people are doing when they're winding down or they're just sort of dabbling in it. But it never faze me. I always wanted to be there and always just wanted to try and ride a good race. So that's where it evolved. But I'd be lying if there wasn't a few moments where I walked around the corner and had to wipe a tear out of my eye.
Yeah, right. So what's a cook look like after doing stuff wrong like that, whether it be your first race, sitting out on the outer rail or, what's it actually look like from a jockey perspective? Because I don't think many people would get to see that or hear that or feel that.
I could imagine you would have had the same from your coaches, like well, I suppose you might have been lucky, but...
No, I wasn't lucky. Don't worry. Most top player in West Coast history, mate. So I was the one copping it.
Exactly. So it kind of, I don't know, when you've messed up, you can see it on everyone's face. You're like, oh, like I'm in trouble here. And then it's just a matter of how deep are you in trouble? And some hold it together really well. The trainers, they'll pull you aside and go, look, young fella, you should have done this better. You should have done that better. And then others just can't hold it anymore. And they call you a few names and that's actually, but it's not, it was never personal. It was never taken personally, but you copped a spray. There was a lot of emotion. It was very raw, and you had to go back and look in the mirror and reevaluate.
Do you remember any? Is there any memorable ones? And you don't have to name anyone, but is there any you think, geez, that was a good cook, that one?
More, I find the ones that upset me more were the ones that were, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. And you nearly got the silent treatment. It's like, could you just yell at me, please? just yell at me. Tell me how useless I am. And then I'll be right. We'll move on. But just the ones that were, the silent treatment or something along those lines is like, now what do I do?
What about your first win? Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do. It was at Norseman on Carry a Gun. The boss, Jack Cockle, he told me, months before I rode, even before I think it was about my fifth race ride or fourth. Now I'm going to go there, fourth or fifth race ride, maybe sixth. He told me before I started riding, he said, oh, you'll win on this. This will be your first winner, Willie. He said it, and that was kind of his art. He set horses for races and was able to pull them off. And he set that horse for that race for me long before I'd even was even ready to ride. So,
what did it feel like?
Oh, it was great.
Come across first.
I remember the whole experience was great. Even running last at that stage was great. There's the whole atmosphere of it. I'd never heard horses' hooves thundering on the ground while I was actually riding the horse before. And I just remember when I rode at Norseman, it's a dirt track and it was quite hard, and just the thundering of the hooves, and I was pretty much in awe of the whole the whole feeling of it. But that particular horse, Carry a Gun, I knew I had a job to do, because he told me from a long way out. The boss had told me from a long way out that this was going to be my first winner. So I just remember turning for home and then roaring at the horse and screaming at the top of my lungs for it to go faster. And, yeah, I think a few people in the crowd might have heard me as well, but I didn't care as long as I went past that line first.
So we spoke to Damon Oliver a little bit earlier in the year on the pod, and he spoke about, what is it, the Ollie Roar?
Ollie Roar, yeah.
And I put my hand up, I'm not the biggest racing expert, but I didn't know that was a thing, that you blokes would talk to the horses, yell at the horses, to get them going.
Well, it's everyone has a different approach. Some like to pat and tell them how pretty they are, and some of them like to rough them up and get under their skin. Not rough them up, but like get in their heads and get in their, I don't know, it's probably the same as your coach. You've probably got one coach patting you on the back, telling you all the good things you're doing. You've got another one telling you how you need to pull your head in and try harder.
Yeah.
And everyone finds what works for them.
And different horses would react differently.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you've got a very limited opportunity to figure out what your horse might want, whether he wants a pat or whether he wants to be sort of trotted around and warmed up, get his blood hot, get him angry, get him getting ready to go, or is he the type of horse that you know he needs to stay calm and try and keep him focused. And everyone has success in different areas.
So when you say you don't have much time, and again, not knowing enough about it, but is that like literally when you come out and you see the horse and they've been paraded around and you've got sort of the time from having a chat to the trainer to jumping on and to riding around to the gates? Is that the sort of time you're talking about?
That's right, yes. So I suppose it all starts when you first lay eyes on the horse. Sometimes you'll be parading pretty hot, or you'll be parading like a dope. And right there, I'll think, geez, he's a bit quiet, this horse. He might need to get his blood hot, or I'll watch him. He's doing cartwheels in the yard, and I'll be like, oh, we're going to try and calm this one down. It starts there. It's a visual thing. Then you talk to the trainer and try and get some idiosyncrasies about the horse, what he likes, what he doesn't like.
He might say he needs to be really calm to race well.
And you're
him calm, and you're like, oh, that's all good.
Exactly. And also, like, my big thing, I'm very lucky. I'm in a good position to do it, but I always say what a trainer says is only a guideline. They could be a mile off, because the horse could be completely different at home. You get him out on the track, you've got to make a decision, whether it's right or wrong. Split second decision, go, right, oh no, I don't agree with that. I need to wake you up, or I need to calm you down. So you always take what they say with a grain of salt, a massive grain of salt. It's my job out on the track to do what I do, and it's their job to do what they do off the track. But it's very hard to sort of instill that sort of confidence in a young rider who's still learning. But that's where I'm at. I take what they say, and I do take it on board, but then I get on the horse and then I go, what do I think I need to do to win that race?
Is it strange that you don't get the time? I don't know, like, you know, the track work you speak about, it doesn't sound like you get to form relationships with every horse you ride on, right? And you might have nine horses on a day. So I can understand that, but it's just, that's probably idiosyncrasy that I don't realise as much, is sometimes you just see that horse for 3 minutes riding it out.
That's right. And that's why I say you've got very limited time to figure out what it may or may not want, a minute or two. Maybe if you've ridden a horse a few times in the past, you'll be more prepared. But quite often it'll be the first time I've sat on the horse ever. And depending on the result, maybe the last time. But I guess... there's very few you get to create an association with. Now and then there'll be one that may not necessarily be a fast horse, but for some reason you line up that you get to ride it a few times and you get to know a few of his likes and dislikes, but not many like that.
How does it work then with, like, the feedback from the trainer then? Because, you know, the race is over, I'm sure you must, like, deliver the horse back, and then they might say something to you. Do you just sort of like take it on. Okay, cool. On to the next one. Because, yeah, you got so many races in a day.
I suppose at that point, it's probably more me giving the trainer feedback.
Right.
Unless, of course, it's one of those sprays where I've messed up. Well, then maybe they are giving me some feedback on my riding ability or lack of. But, no, probably at that's probably a secondary stage. I think after then I'll probably be coming in and giving them feedback. How did the horse feel? How did the race unfold? Because the film will only probably tell one side of the story. A lot of the times it'll look one way on the film and I'll be like, no, that's not what happened at all. It was a lot more rough and tumble than it looked. Or something will look, you know, drastic on a film. You're like, that was very minor. It didn't affect us at all.
Mm.
So it's probably definitely more afterwards me giving feedback to the trainer, either about his horse or about the race in particular. And that way we can all form a plan on what to do next, whether it's, you know, if you've just won, things are a lot easier because you've got a clear direction, you've won a race, you're in a good place, you go on to the next race. But if you haven't been lucky enough to win, well, you've got something to work on. Maybe I can give them something they can work on or I don't know. There's lots of different approaches to go on.
What about when you're in the gate and given the nature of racing, some races are bigger than others, right? You know, you've got some group ones and then you've got, you know, it might be Wednesday, you know, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. How do you feel when you're in the gate? Do you approach every race the same? Do you get more nervous for the big races? Can you talk us through like what it's like, you know, game day? You know, you might have 30 seconds before you're about to jump.
Yeah, by then everything's settled down. Mostly I never get nervous anymore. Especially like it's nearly become, it's a job now. I've ridden in a lot of races. You turn up, you do your job. Once in a while, the only time I really find myself getting, say, butterflies or a little bit nervous now is, say, this Saturday, the Derby's coming up as we're recording this Saturday. I'm probably a little bit nervous when I see the barrier. The fields will come out on Tuesday afternoon. And if I see the barrier and what my field is, I'll kind of get a little bit nervous, start plotting the plan, how I want the race to unfold for me for the first hour or so. And then that all sort of like settles down and it's a job again.
Yeah. And what about the jump?
But yeah, as far as the jump, it's very, unfortunately, it's quite boring for you. Like it's not, early on, it used to be the most thrilling thing. You'd jump out, you felt the power of the horse, you felt it was fantastic. But now all butterflies are gone. You've got a game plan. You've got a job to do. Go do it.
So where do you get your emotion from? Because you can't tell me you just jump on a horse and it wins or loses and, you know, happy or sad, whatever. I can just tell, again, without knowing you too well, you got to have something that motivates you.
Well, winning. Winning's a motivation. We want to win every race we go in. That doesn't happen and I want it to happen. But, I think as far as horses and things go, they definitely feed off your emotion. So I try to be very flat line pre-race. I don't want to give them nervous energy to feed off of. I only want to give them sort of positive vibes and I want to give the horse confidence to do what he's got to do. But so I think once you hit the line, especially in some of the big races, if you've hit the line and, you know, especially me being lucky enough, I've ridden some very short price favourites in big races, it's definitely more of a relief and you like kind of let a bit of emotion out with relief.
Mm.
But in general, just the satisfaction of winning or the satisfaction of riding a good race and getting a good result is the motivation for me.
Do you trash talk at all in the gates or while you're racing?
No, not so much. In a lot of time, there can be some banter. Sometimes there's good fun out there.
Like what sort of things are being said?
Like
are you talking about each other's horses or like just random
haircuts
stuff?
Or
probably more about something that we did three races ago. Someone being silly, like don't forget to turn left on this one, Josh, or something like that. We'll find something.
Yeah.
It'll be anything. But definitely there's no banter in the big races. Big races come around. It's everyone's quiet. Everyone's got a job to do. But there is a little bit here and there. And probably not so much in the race or behind the barriers. It's probably more so in the jockey's room before or after a race. There's always a bit of someone's telling a story or or something's happening somewhere. You're either listening, shaking your head or you're part of the conversation having a joke. It's one way or the other.
Is that a bit like, you know, that's the locker room, right?
Definitely.
And so there'd be characters, there'd be loud and talkative ones and there'd be silent ones. What are you like in the locker room?
I definitely get up and about sometimes, but I don't No, I'm definitely not a silent one. I've got an opinion, and I let people know it, and they hear it, whether they want it, whether they like it or not. Don't know if that's a good thing or not, but that's who I am. I'm definitely not a silent, broody one, but I also don't think I'm the storyteller either. There's a few of those in there that you shake your head once they get started.
Is there ever any tension, like after a race, something's happened? There must be, given that there's a fair bit at stake, not only monetarily, but like it's a dangerous sport. There must be. It can't just be all, you know, good job, buddy. You know, everyone.
Oh, you mean as in, as well? There, yeah. Is there a few biffs or?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's. Well, if we're not happy with the way someone's done something, especially that first 5 minutes after a race, you know, the blood's hot, the emotions are high. Yeah, well, there's plenty of. We'll coach one another on how to ride, I suppose, quite explicitly. Yeah, there's plenty of that. There's plenty of like someone won't be happy with what someone else did, but it's 9 times out of 10, it's over and done with within minutes.
Yes.
Once in a while, there'll be a little bit more.
Yes.
But it's very rare. I think the respect and the camaraderie in the jockey's room is a lot better than it used to be. I think when I first started riding, there was a lot more, so a few more biffos in the room. But funny enough, more often than not, any disagreements that happened in the jockey's room was normally over seating in the jockey's room itself. If someone sat in the wrong seat, there was a fight over that.
Is that right?
If you cut them off out in the race, you'd be, oh, you silly bugger, and you move on. But if you do not sit in someone else's seat, and not without there being consequences anyway.
And how are they assigned? Is this like tradition?
Tradition, yeah.
Is that right? Tell me more about this.
Well, the one that I can think of in particular is Troy Jackman and David O'Hare. I think Troy Jackman, he was quite an older rider at the time, but he hadn't been riding for a long time. He was at Pinjarra. He come back for he made one of his comeback rides, and David O'Hare, sorry, he was in David O'Hare's seat, or Troy Jackman said, no, this is my seat. I've been riding for 30 years. I've sat here for 30 years. And they had a disagreement over it. And it was actually the best thing ever. It was great. There's some pushing and shoving and argy-bargy, but it was so all good. Overseating. It was great.
In like a lot of sports, there's rivalries between two teams. Is that happening in riders as well? Like, you know, if you're aware of a certain jockey being in that race, you're like, oh, I got to get this guy.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose right now I'm in a rivalry with Chris Parnham. That's nothing to do with him and his character as a person, but he's the number two rider and he's poised to pass me right now. So if there's someone going to win a race, I don't want it to be him. And I'm sure he's the same as me. I don't think there's anything personal about it, but yeah.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's a healthy, respectable. I'd rather him not win.
Yeah,
only because. But if it was, say Clint Johnson Porter, if he was in second and he was about to pass me, well, the last person I want to see win is Clint Johnson Porter. So if I'm lined up in a race and I can do my best to beat him home, well, I'll be doing that.
Pike in the last. Why is your record in the last so good? This has become a thing for punters around the country and. I'm sure you do know about it. I'm not going to ask you if you know about it, but Pike in the last, is that something that you think about or are you just trying to win every race you're in?
I do try to win every race I'm in. For a long time, I didn't think about it, but I can't help but think about it now because I don't know. I think I'll be have I'll go out for the last race somewhere and think I'm only just a very ordinary chance, just hoping to get a good result, and I'll go out and it'll be favourite. I'm like, oh no, these guys are on me again. Oh no, like, and I do feel a little bit of, I know people are relying on me to get a job done. I really want to be the one that gets the job done for them. But why that is, I think the reason why I'm so good in the last is I've had normally 7 rides before it to figure out how the heck I'm going to win a race. And I'd like to say it's because I'm that clever, I win the last. But no, I've had 7 practice runs beforehand and figured out what the heck I need to do.
Bet on Pike, drink what you like is another one of my favourites. You heard that one?
Yeah, yeah. I've heard a few slow. And it's, honestly, the position I'm in, where I started, I can't believe anyone knows my name. So, yeah, it's great. I enjoy it.
What about Willie on a filly? Is that a slogan that you're aware of?
No, I'm not. Because
I just heard that for the first time. You just made that up. Yeah, I was talking to my wife earlier on the phone and I said that we were chatting to
you. You sure that like, she was talking?
Willie on a filly. And I was like, what are you talking about? She goes, filly is a horse, a female horse. I was like, are you making this up? But there you go. Oh, it's just off the off chance that it was one. Willie on a filly.
Well, I'll take it.
Shout out, Beck. Oh, she may not even know Willie was a jockey, mate.
No, she does. She knew.
That's bloody brilliant. Yeah, so Pike in the last. The punting element is a part of racing, right? And how does that sit with jockeys, not just you, but, you know, there's pressure from multiple sources. We've spoken about the trainers and the owners and that sort of stuff, but the punters, speak to AFL players and other sports people, and that's starting to probably make its way into sport more than it has been a part of racing. Racing, it's probably more embedded than it is other sports.
Yeah.
Does that affect you, but your thoughts on it?
No, it doesn't affect me one bit because makes no difference to me whatsoever if you've had your 10 by 5 on a horse. I'm out there for me, my connections. I get paid more if I win. I want to win. And obviously it goes hand in hand. If I'm on a good chance and the punters have backed my horse, It's almost a byproduct. I'm happy that they were able to be on and get a return and get a result. I'm happy for them and I think it's great. But at the same time, I'm out there for me. I want to win for me more than anything, or me and my connections
and your family.
Yeah, like everyone to do with me and my operation that makes me work. The punting element, like it's great if they can be along for a winner with me. If not, well, that's tough luck. I just try and do what I think I need to do to win the race. And yeah, the punting, yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one. Like it's, I know it's there and there is a lot of pressure, but the pressure comes from within ourselves to win, yes, to get a good result.
Yes.
There's, you're not really on social media, are you?
No.
Good decision.
Yeah. But I imagine there would be jockeys out there that are on social media and they must cop messages and stuff. Have you heard of that sort of thing?
Because it happens
in a lot of, you know, other sport codes.
That's right. And that's why cyberbullying is a myth. I was getting a lot of abusive messages, and funny enough, I deleted Facebook. The messages stopped. The cyber abuse stopped. But I've seen a lot of the other guys, and it's a joke. They'll be like, "Oh, check this one out," and there's things that stop just short of death threats, and they're a joke amongst us now. Like, have a look at this
idiot
mug. What means nothing to means nothing to you. And 9 times out of 10, it's a fake account with a fake name. Yep. And you go, oh, look at this hero. Couldn't even put his name to it.
Yeah, correct.
That's nothing.
Yeah, I love that. That's quite brilliant. That's good about just, don't want to cop abuse online, just delete your social media.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I say cyberbullying is a myth. It's a unicorn. It's not a real thing. Delete your socials and it's gone.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Now, talk to us about winning. You know, you've been mentioning it a lot. What's your best ever? Is there one that sits above the rest? You've had some great wins.
Like my favourite ever win,
Perth Cup,
is easily Elite Bell in the Railway Stakes.
Yeah,
Felt like a hoodoo race for me. I didn't think I was ever going to win it. I'd had probably 3 or 4 rides in it beforehand. Hadn't got within cooee of them. And to me, that's our pin-up race, still is. I know the Quokka's around the corner, but that was the race I dreamt of coming through through the ranks. And to be able to win it on her from a little bit of an impossible position.
It was 2014.
I can't remember the year, tell you the truth. I remember the ride and I remember everything about it. And But yeah, just even just the horse herself, she was just a fantastic horse that never ever thought that she was Group One level, and she just kept progressing. And every time we asked her to do something, she handled it. And
can you talk us through the race a little bit from a jockey's perspective? I think it'd be interesting for people that are interested in that sort of stuff. That like how did she jump? How did she run? If you remember anything about it, I'm sure you can.
Well, I remember it all started off very well for me because I think I was number 13, barrier 13. And for me, that's a good thing.
Double unlucky is lucky or something like that.
No, because 13 was my Gymkhana number when I was a kid. So 13 is my favourite number.
Great.
And I do think on the day that I was a little concerned. I think one of the emergencies didn't get a run and I think I come into 12. So my confidence was a little dented there. But no, overall, everything went fantastic. I was thinking to myself, how the heck am I going to win? Because she was a back marker. And I knew I couldn't circle them without the exact right card up or things like that. So as soon as we jumped, I just went left, find the rail. Goes right back to the boss, Jack Cockle. He said, the rail's the shortest way home. Don't ever be afraid of it. Jumped and I just went left. And I was lucky enough I found the rail and I think I had one or two behind me. Then the rest of the race just unfolds. There's not much to sort of do in the middle stages other than just hold it together and don't, less is more at this stage. Like keep the horse, leave the horse alone. You found your spot, whether it's the spot you want or not, you've just got to leave it alone and wait until probably the 600 from home, then things start getting a bit itchy. But the tempo raises. And I remember the tempo lifted. There was a bit of a gap in front of me and I was able to just keep picking off gaps a little bit until I got to on straightening. And then I thought I was in a world of trouble. I was like, where the heck am I going to go? But I was just lucky enough, I think just to my outside, there was a gap appearing. And the best thing about Elite Belle is the moment I said, let's go there, she was already there. She goes, she just had that best can-do attitude. She said, go there, yep, sure, and we were off and through. And I don't know, when she kicked, then when I got through and I hit the front, I absolutely crapped myself because I thought, oh, no, now what do winning was a reality at this point. I'm like, oh, now I'm gonna lose it. I don't want to lose it. And so I crapped myself at that point. But she won, and she won, I think, by about half a length. But I was too scared to salute. I was too scared to do anything. I wanted to come back and see my number up in the stall before I actually allowed myself to.
Right, so no celebrations you come
on. There was very little.
Knew you won it.
I knew I'd won. I'd won by about half a length and I was still sitting there going, oh, did I win? I didn't want to allow myself to get that disappointed if I didn't win, but I don't know. That's just what the brain does to you under those circumstances.
Do you get to celebrate with a trainer and owner when you win a big race like that?
Sometimes, but I'm not really that type. Yep. Some will, you know, will go out, you'll go out for dinner and celebrate or...
Yep.
But I generally get to the end of the day and I'm knackered. I don't know how they go out afterwards. I suppose at the time it seems like a good idea, but once you've had a shower and cooled down and packed your bag, it's like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Home time, like go home, have something to eat, go to sleep.
Yeah, it's
just how it is.
What's the conditioning like for you as a jockey with training and stuff? Are you purely cardio? Are you doing like touching away to like, how are you keeping in shape?
I don't do anything.
Write down the notes.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say is I'm right up there with one of the ones who rides the most. And I feel like that puts me in good stead. Same thing again. The old boss said to me, in the early days, they tried to introduce a few fitness programs and one of them was weightlifting. And he goes, if you want to be a weightlifter, go be a weightlifter. If you want to be a jockey, go ride a horse. So
was that from Jack again?
That was from Jack Cockle, yes.
That's a good one.
And so all he ever let me do is like, go ride horses. If you want to ride horses, ride horses. And so even now, most meetings I'll have full books 3-4 days a week. Then you chuck in trials on a Monday. Those old days off, I feel like I don't want to do anything, so I don't. Once in a while, I'll have like a little, I don't know, not sure. I'll jump up and I'll want to do something. I'll do a few sit ups or something, and then I'll go. then the next day, I'll be like, oh, what was I thinking?
What was I going to say? You remind me of Buddha Hocking. He's my coach in juniors, and he was the same. Buddha, what weights did you used to do? He said, none. So mate, he was pretty big guy. He's a midfielder, Geelong, great. And he said, mate, I was having 40 touches on the weekend. I was training during the week with the footies. How much does a footy weigh? I said, I don't know, 200, 300 grams. He said, mate, do some calculations. If I have the footy 600 times in my hand and it's 300 grams, I'm doing all the weights on there with the footy, right? I'm doing the weights with the footy. It's very good. It's a similar mentality to you. What race haven't you won that you want to win? Like, what's on the list for you that you know you'd love to be able to win that one?
Well, Quokka's around the corner, so but that's a pretty new race in WA.
So the Quokka, let's stop there. I'll come back. The Quokka is the richest race in WA. It's a slot race.
Yep.
Owners will buy a slot and they get to pick their horse and their jockey. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's a very it's pretty much still a new concept. I know it's been out for a little while longer over east than that, but it's still a new concept and I'm still trying to wrap my head around exactly how it all works. But essentially there's people buy a slot, they get to pick a horse to fill their slot. A lot of the times they'll pick their own rider as well, but at the same time, most of the time it falls into place that they want the person who's been riding the horse, so not too much jockey changing going on, but they can if they want. They can set the rule. The whole point of it is the slot holder can set the rules. They negotiate an amount to split as far as the purse goes. They negotiate everything, and that's the part that I'm not really a part of, so I don't know exactly how it goes, but All I know is I haven't won that race yet, so I would like to win it. And being the richest race in WA, yep, it's popped up out of nowhere. It had massive success in its first year. This is its second running coming up,
yep,
and it's shaping to be better again. So, yeah, I'd love to win that one. But I've won nearly all the races in WA, so I would like to one day find myself back in a Cox Plate over east.
Right.
I had one ride in it, made an absolute mess of it, and I would like a chance to redeem myself.
Right. And getting rides in those races over in Melbourne and being WA's greatest ever jockey, is that more difficult to get races in those big races over there? Like, I guess I was expecting you to say the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, I suppose everyone, but I'm not nostalgic like that. I just find the Cox Plate distance is more suitable to a bigger variety of horses. It's run on a very peculiar track at Moonee Valley, and then it's weight for age. So then when you talk about Melbourne Cup, it's at a distance that, you know, it's well beyond some of the horses that go in the race, but they're having a go anyway. It's not weight for age, so you get real lightweights that can dominate the race. So the best horse will have a heavy weight. He may not get to feature because he's handicapped.
Right.
So I just find, just from a point of view, I think it's just nowhere to hide. Everyone's on level weights. It's at a distance where it's not too far, you can still be at your best. And then you chuck in this track that just can be so unforgiving. I'd just love to be able to win that race. Just to say I ticked all those boxes and conquered all those things. I had a horse that was equally as good as everybody else on the day because he carried the same weight, and then it didn't have a distance advantage or disadvantage, and I nailed my ride on the track.
Mm.
So that's, it's like the great leveler of a race.
For me it is. And yeah, like you said, someone else might say, no way, I'd rather a Melbourne Cup or an Everest now that's there. But a Cox Plate just holds that ultimate challenge.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. What about, so racing over here in WA, you've done that a lot part of your career, and then there was a period sort of while we're in COVID lockdowns that you made the move over east and you effectively had to leave the state. What was that like? It must have been difficult from a racing perspective.
Yeah, it was. So I wouldn't have the vaccine. So a lot of things were going crazy at the time. Everyone, there was a lot of uncertainty and I was willing to just not ride. I suppose I'm a bit arrogant, a bit pig-headed. I didn't like being told what to do. I'd like to say I had the moral high grounds of going on some other reason, but essentially I just didn't think it felt right being told what to do. So I was in a good enough position. I went, oh, well, I won't ride. But an opportunity arose in Sydney. They relaxed their mandate rules and so the window was open there. So I went across and at first it was great. I didn't have any issues with it all. I had to go in my own separate room just as an easing in period. And I didn't have to. The stewards over there were fantastic. They said, look, we're not telling you have to, but some of the other guys said it'd make them feel more comfortable. If you think it'd make your integration here better, that's entirely your choice. We're not condoning it in any way. We're just giving you the option, might make it easier for you to assimilate here with the other riders. Mm. And I said, sure, no worries. So I was in my own little room for the first 2 weeks. And
the VIP booth.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I didn't mind it at all. But the whole challenge of it all was it took you right back to your apprenticeship days. Like I was lucky that I have a name so that I was able to draw on and people knew who I was and they wanted to put me on somewhat. But at the same time, I had to like take a big backward step, relearn my trainers, relearn how to ride tracks and there's a lot going on. I think I did very well for the first 6 months that I was there. I was happy with myself. I thought I did well. But the last 6 months I was there, I did a garbage effort. I was getting very good opportunities. I wasn't converting them. And I was ready to go home by then. I probably should have packed up earlier than I did. But overall, the experience was great. I lived a different lifestyle than I was used to. I didn't really do anything other than I already do. I ride races. The most exciting thing was I had to turn right instead of left because Sydney races the other direction.
Didn't stuff that up.
So
at all,
yeah, exactly. But overall, it was it was great. I enjoyed the whole lot of it. But
sounds like there's some challenges though, like that, and then maybe that's why it was good, right? It was challenging someone who's been good at their sport.
Yep. I definitely didn't. It was in a lot of ways it was good. I almost took a back seat. I was just happy to take a ride and do my best on it. There was no, here's a $1.90 favorite, you have to win on it or you're the worst person. That was all J-Mac's responsibility over there. Yeah. So almost enjoyed riding a little bit again. And well, not again, but back to the grassroots. I just enjoyed the challenge of trying to get a win.
Yeah.
But I said that was the first 6 months, but the worst part about being there is it just never stopped raining. The year that I was there, it never stopped raining. I can't believe it.
Really?
It heavy 10, like they called them heavy 10 tracks. Well, they were heavy 20s. It was so frustrating because I come from West Australia where it even in our wet years, it's not that wet and not that good at riding on wet tracks, it turns out. As I found out the hard way, and because like a classical good ride where you get in a good position, good rhythm, breathe, it doesn't account for all that much if you're on a horse that doesn't get through the heavy track. And I don't know, I found it very hard to convert a lot of my chances through a good ride. You had to actually think about it differently, and it was definitely a challenge.
Yeah. Sounds like a good experience, though, that you did it.
Mostly good.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. What about the heel, mate? You've come in. Talk us through what happened there. It was a bit of a freak accident, and you got one sock up, one sock down at the moment. You got a compression
cool
bandage
kid,
on it.
S-A, bra.
That's good. Well, how is it?
It's getting there very slowly.
You got a bit of a limp.
Yeah.
You broke your heel, right?
Yes, I did. I broke my heel. I'd like to say it was happening in the barriers or I was riding a horse and it bucked me off or something, but no, I was on my son's motorbike doing a wheelie and flipped over backwards, put my foot down to try and catch myself and broke my heel.
I didn't actually know that. That's crazy. Is it far enough past that it's funny now?
No, it was funny the whole time, yeah. Other than being reckless and stupid and all those things, it was funny the whole time. Like I was on Jets motorbike and here you are, this is how you do it and that's what you don't do.
What's that?
This whole learning of watching others and how they fail, yeah, Dad just taught you a lesson.
You've been off for a bit though, eh? By 10 weeks or so?
Yeah, that's right. I think it was 10 weeks. It might have been somewhere around 10 weeks all up.
How's it feeling?
It hurt like heck. Right, did it? Me first few rides back. It still hurts like heck now, but I've come up with ways we're strapping it differently now. And it's a lot better. If I strap it in a, I don't really understand it myself, but I broke my heel, but the front of my foot, if I strap the front of my foot heavily, it feels really good.
Right.
And I started off strapping the back, trying to protect the heel, and I was still getting a lot of pain. But for some reason, when I put the strapping right forward, it feels great. Yeah. And I think on Oscar's Fortune over the weekend was probably the first time I rode in a race without actually feeling the pain. The race itself, you don't feel the pain. When the barrier's open, the adrenaline's up, you don't feel the pain. It's right before and right after, and it's just a bit uncomfortable. It hurts, but it's yourself. You can push through it. It's not that big a problem. You grit your teeth, you can go through. It's not really that big a deal. But just for the sake of being able to think the way you want. It'd be nice if the pain wasn't there. And on Saturday, just gone with Oscar's fortune, with the way that we're strapping it now, it was the first time I was able to worry more about the horse than my foot.
Who have you got in the Derby and who have you got in the Quokka next couple of races coming up?
I got Oscar's fortune in the Quokka coming up and Bucket's Ridge for the Derby. Both have won their main lead up, their respective lead up events. Been very good rides. Obviously, as far as the Quokka goes, we've got a lot of Eastern State Raiders coming across for that one. It's going to be super competitive. The East States riders are coming. Big purse on offer. So I've got a fantastic ride there, but we still got to try and get the job done.
It was a close one last year, wasn't it? Amelia's Jewel.
It was, yes. Amelia's Jewel.
You're riding that? You're
I have the accolades of being the first one to run last in that race.
Someone had to do it?
Yeah, it was me. I got the wooden spoon.
There you go.
I got one of those.
So anyway, so it's a nice vibe in racing for me because a lot of the times this was this is sort of like our juvenile season, and if you didn't happen to land a good ride in a couple of those real feature races, it was a pretty just normal time of year. Whereas when you're talking about our carnival time, even if you didn't have a real good ride in the main races, there's a vibe, there's an atmosphere in it, and it's great. You love being in part of it. So with the Quokka being on, there's a little bit of vibe around, a little bit in the air, and it's nice for this time of year because you're not used to having it, and it feels good.
So it's a good thing for racing.
Absolutely, yeah. Everything's good. Like racing's going great from a participant perspective. Racing's in a great place. We're going good. Everyone's always complaining and moaning about something, but that's the nature of the beast, isn't it?
You sound pretty happy, mate, so it's good to hear. Now, that's pretty much us done and dusted. The Quokka, by the way, is Saturday, April 20th at Ascot, so make sure you get down there and see Willie Park absolutely slay them in that one. Thanks to Tap Touch. Yeah, correct. Go Oscar.
Go Oscar.
Now, this part of the show, that's enough from Dan and I, Willie. We've got a little segment called Scotial Media. Yes, that's right. I can see you just ticking off in the head right now. Not social, Scotial. We know you've deleted your social media. Where we're bringing you to Scotial Media. This is where the people get to ask you the questions. So we put this out to the fans, and there's been a pretty good reaction across the board, mate. So you're ready for some hard-hitting questions from our fans?
Here we go.
All right, Ben Miller, what we got?
Apart from the
Maybe we've answered this. Maybe you've got a different answer.
Apart from the Railway Stakes, which would be the race anywhere in the world you would like to win?
Yeah, internationally?
I'm such a sad. Everything's in my own backyard. Up until recently, I didn't even think about a Cox Plate. Everything's only ever Railway Stakes. If I'm not there, I don't care about it. But I will say, I'll give you one thing I would like to do maybe one day, I've only just started thinking about it recently, is head back to Hong Kong and compete during their championship series. And I rode in Hong Kong once before and I couldn't get a ride on those big days. So maybe just going over there and having a ride in one of their group ones, maybe that'd be a bucket list.
All right. Maybe we put Willie's name forward. Yeah, if Willie couldn't get it done, maybe we could get it done for him, mate. Just have to trim us in on the winnings that you get over there. Yeah. Now, Cloudy 91.
Is there a horse you wish you got to ride but never did?
Winx, of course. we'll tone it down from Winx. That's too high.
I heard on the radio today, Winx's filly or Winx itself just got sold for $10 million.
Yeah, that's right.
Was it Winx or was it?
No, her bait. Yeah. Her first live foal, her first one didn't make it, but this is her first live foal to make it to the sale ring, and
$10 million.
Went for $10 million.
Wow. Australian record by 6.5 million. The last was 2.5, and now it's 10.
Crazy.
Have you ridden in a horse, where it's been like the what are they called, a baby of a winner?
I've been lucky enough. So I got associated with the Peters Investment Empire, and I was actually that's their whole go. They breed horses, and so I was lucky enough. I got to ride a lot of daughters and sons of previous winners that I rode. So that was a nice feeling. But the original question, I reckon, a horse that I never got to ride that I wish I could have would be Takeover Target. This might be, it'll be a throwback for some, but I actually rode him track work twice, and I don't know, he's just a cool horse. I took him out for a canter on the small sand. He didn't touch. He's an absolute gentleman. First time at Ascot, flown in from, I think it was Melbourne or Sydney, I can't remember now. And he was just an absolute dude of a horse. I was, what a legend. And then I took him on another occasion for a gallop in between races, an exhibition gallop on the grass. And that was the difference. He went from this like dude, casual. He was a racehorse. He was a machine. He was a weapon. I had to hang on with all my might to hold him slow enough so I didn't make a mess of the workout. So, and from then I was like, oh geez, I really wish I could have rode him in a race.
Why didn't he get to?
He wasn't my ride. He was above my pay grade.
That's very good. Dubster.
Does the horse know if they win?
Yeah, I think they do. I think there's no coincidence that when you see a horse, just say that every now and again you'll come across a horse that it's running well, but it never seems to win. But then when it does win, it'll string two or three together. And for me, that's enough to say, I think they know.
Bit of
confidence. They draw confidence out of whether or not you put it down to the win itself or just the maybe the vibe of everyone when they do win and the horse knew it did a good job, so it tries to repeat it. I'm not sure what mentality you want to take with it, but I do believe it. Winning is a habit in every part of your life.
Blake double underscore.
How many more Perth Cups will you and Chuffer win?
Puffer.
Is it Puffer?
Yeah, that'd be Grant Williams. Grant and Alana Williams.
Chuffer Puffer.
So, mate, I hope we win lots more. A lot more. That's a hard one to answer, but I'll tell you what, at this stage, I'll be happy if we can get one more, and any more is a bonus.
Great. Very good. Like it a lot. What about Fergo Graham?
Who is the best staying type in WA?
I don't know. Anyone that I've just won on, I guess. that's actually really tricky. I probably don't put enough thought into rides like that. I'm always probably a bit more in the moment trying to find a winner for next weekend or the weekend after. I've probably not got that good of an eye for scoping out a horse that's going to be the next good staying type or the next Perth Cup horse. I'll probably deal with that issue as it comes. So I probably can't give you a good answer there.
It's fine.
Chippy Norton.
Do you still play indoor cricket?
Oh, up until the Krusty Demons motorbike accident. Evel Knievel. What could have been? But no, yeah, I was right up until I broke my heel. I was still playing indoor cricket. I'd switched from Mandra to Leeming. Everything back now.
Six or eight aside.
No, I'm absolutely useless. I'm just happy they let me play. I think it's one of those things, you're hopeless at it, so that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that's me. There's eight aside at Leeming. It was six aside in Mandra, so I'm trying to adjust to the...
What are you, though? You might be hopeless, but...
I'm a bowler. I'm actually... When people haven't seen me for the first time, I'm tricky because I come in, it skids on, and they don't realise it's on them before it is. But once I've bowled too many to them, they figure it out pretty quick.
So you're like, I don't know, Mirrorly. That's probably who you like.
No, I'm medium pace. I can't spin the ball. Please, okay. I'm happy if it goes down the other end.
I thought you were coming in with a little tweakers or something.
No, not at all. No, it's pace bowling, if you want to call it that.
You just called it medium pace.
I'm going medium. I'm not no fast bowler, I can tell you that. But no, I think that's good fun. The whole lot of it's good fun.
Now, I mentioned this earlier on in the chat, mate, but we've got one in from Freddie Flanagan who says, Pikey, can you tell us, if you bet on Pike, can you drink what you like?
Well, water always comes out of the tap, doesn't it? Jeez. no, not at all. That's for me, if you're, I don't know, pick your battles. I can't win on anything. I get the best rides in the state and I'm still going at about a 25% strike rate, so figure that out for yourself there. Just pick the one you like and have a go at that. Otherwise, sit and watch.
Very good. Last one.
From the Eggman. How do you like your eggs?
Oh, that's it. That's eggs every day. You get fried eggs, but it's still got to be turned over. But still to the point where the inside's runny and gooey.
Right. Not too long.
Yeah, it's not that. You've got to flip it over. So you've got to cook it enough so you can turn it.
Yeah.
But you still got to not break the yolk and it's still got to be runny.
Sounds like an art.
Yeah, don't mess it up. If it break the yolk, you got to get rid of it and go again.
Is that right?
Yeah, no broken yolks.
Have you got your own chooks?
I used to have all that. Since Sydney, all of that's gone. But actually, we used to have chickens and we had everything. It was good old funny farm happening. But now, it's since Sydney, a lot of that's all gone.
It's got the dirt bike chat where you
Evel Knievel all the way.
I've just got one more question for you. What are your thoughts on a Shetland?
Shetland pony. Mm. I think they're like the devil reborn, I think.
They're just such an odd creature.
Yeah, they are. I suppose they're like a chihuahua and a dog. Like everyone's like, oh, how cool, but they're evil. that's them right
that's
there.
That's it. Yeah, that's fine.
Mate, that's us pretty much finished up. Did you have fun?
Yeah, definitely. That was great fun.
Very good. Willie Pike, thanks for joining us, mate.
Thanks for having me.
You're a good man. Good luck in the Derby. Good luck in the Quokka. I reckon we may have to build a little special.
Yeah,
I know he said he can't win on anything, but
we'll
our
take 25%.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we've got to get you a ride in Hong Kong. No worries. Yeah, we'll do that as well.
Yeah, we go.
Backchat double underscore is on socials. Backchat powered by Paywise this year. A big thank you to Tab Touch.
Mm.
Got our man over here in his hat and his shirt and looking very nice, I've got to say, in the purple. Tab Touch, you've.
You got the touch.
Thank you very much. Whippersnapper Whiskey, ID Athletic, Mamba Digital, Shelter Brewing, Co, Leadable Precinct. Our good friends everywhere. Thanks to our VIPs, our patrons. You can find all that stuff at backchatpodcast.com.au, or you can buy merch, you can buy tickets, everything else at backchatstudios.com.au. Willie Pike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.